This is ARRL's Eclectic Tech, a bi-weekly look at the technical and scientific side of amateur radio with your host Steve Ford, WB8IMY. Eclectic Tech is brought to you by ICOM. ICOM, for the love of ham radio, is about the passion for an incredible hobby. Visit ICOM in the community webpage at www.icomamerica.com/community.
I have the pleasure of speaking with Bart Yonke, W9JJ. He's the ARRL Radio Sport Manager. Good afternoon, Bart.
Good afternoon, Steve. It's great to hear from you, and thanks for having me on.
Well, you too. In a story that appeared on the ARRL website in January, just last month, there was an item about the fact that apparently you're awarding somewhat more 222 megahertz worked all states awards. Is that correct?
That is. It's a return to an environment that hadn't seen any activity for, close to 35 years.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like Rodney Dangerfield saying, you know, the 222 megahertz band don't get no respect. Don't get a lot of activity either.
Exactly.
But that appears to be changing at the moment. In fact, in the story, it said that K1OR had just clinched worked all states number 13 on 222. Is that right?
That is correct.
And right behind him was, who else was it? Oh, former President Joel Harrison, W5ZN. And,
sure.
And also Marshall Williams, K5QE, all the way down there in Texas. How are they managing to do this, Bart? Because when I think 222 megahertz, it's hard for me to conceive of somebody, especially in the middle of the United States, being able to work every single state, including Alaska and Hawaii. How are they going about this?
Well, Steve, it might be well to give you one of these Paul Harvey moments and give you the rest of the story.
By all means.
And the rest of the story is to really take a step back and look at what has been the progression on the 220/222 megahertz band. As many of your listeners may have read in the ARRL letter back in January, we discussed the fact that this new activity is building on something that began more than 35 years ago by a group of 220 megahertz aficionados who began their quest for working all states. And as we mentioned in the article, Terry Van Bedschoten, W0 Victor Bravo, was the very first person to work all states on 220 megahertz. He was followed during that same period of time by a group of amateurs that were all busy in that same quest, a quest to, if you will, be in the top 10. And then due to the, again, what we describe in the letter article, changes in the band, commercial interests, staking claim to a portion of it, the FCC making it available for commercial interests, our losing of the bottom of the band from 220 to 222, it tend to stall efforts by a number of these participants. So back in the 1983, 84, 85, 86, and 87 era, a number of amateurs, and again, you'll see in the link that we provide in the story, to a web page that we actually maintain, WAS status, WAS serial numbers, et cetera, for 6 meters, 2 meters, 220/222, 432, and even 1296. This list is out there. And essentially, it was W0VB, W0SD, and WB0TEM, which has its own story behind it. And in fact, listeners may find of interest the story of the quest for 220 or 1.25 meter WAS. Of interest, it'll be written up in the Central States VHF proceedings for the July convention, which is going to be held in La Crosse, Wisconsin, in the next few months, pandemic permitting. And other stalwarts that you'll have heard call signs of before, Fred and Lee Fish, W5FF and K5FF, Al Ward, who has just been so prominent in many of our VHF, UHF, and microwave exploits, now W5LUA, the VE3EMS, who's now VE7PS, W3GPY, K9KFR, and finally KA0Y. KA0Y had his, I guess it was started out small and grew to 40, even 50-foot dish, and he used that for EME and WAS and multiple bands from the state of Iowa. And as I recall, the last time, and I think the dish is still available, K3 station now has that dish in Iowa, but KA0Y was written up regarding his use of the dish because he had it on a gun mount from a destroyer. And that was always interesting reading. He also, it was from the home of James T. Kirk, which I'm just trying to remember the name of the city now.
Oh, the Star Trek fans will kill us for not remembering.
They will. Riverside, Iowa.
There you go.
So KA0Y set up his 50-foot dish in Riverside, Iowa, the home of James T. Kirk. That was to make that the future home of James T. Kirk.
Right.
More recently. So efforts over about the last five, seven, maybe even more years by a stalwart group of individuals has rekindled interest in WAS on the 1.25-meter band. Joel Harrison, as you mentioned earlier, obtained the first of this new group of Wichita State award recipients back in December of 2021, becoming number 11. Marshall Williams, K5QE, followed him shortly thereafter at the beginning of January as Wichita State's number 12. And K1OR submitted his application in about the middle of January, earning number 13. Now, having said that, there are some who are really close. K1WHS, Dave Olean. Many may know Dave as the chief design engineer for Chris-Craft antennas back in the late 70s and 80s. And also Ray Rector, WA4NJP, who's very active from the southeastern U.S. Both of those fellows have 50 states worked, but they're still trying to collect up the cards, the QSO confirmations that they had earned from QSOs that go back perhaps several years, but either didn't have the card or misplaced the card. And then a couple of others are nipping on their heels, and 9HF, David Carroll, who's in Florida, is at 49 states, and he's waiting to work his 50th state, and N0AKC, who is in Wisconsin, and he just needs a couple of states, and he will have achieved WAS in 222. So you had commented on what makes it possible, or what makes it unique by seeking or pursuing this quest for 1.25-meter Wichita State. And a couple of things come to mind. The first is that the 220 band is not a band that we always had. It was something new gained during work activities, World Amateur Radio Conference. And it is a Region 2 only band, which means it's North America and South America only. Next is that there wasn't always multi-mode equipment for the band. So although there are transverters and some early transceivers, even today a good amount of the people who operate on this band are using transverters or Yaesu FT-736Rs with 220 modules to accomplish what they're accomplishing. That's probably been one of the greater challenges for the band, is just having people who possess the equipment. And while you can do it on FM, that is make contacts, and people do so in during the VHF contests, certainly the long distance contacts tend not to be done on FM. Carrying forward, there is a benefit to being in the middle of the U.S., and this is held true for certainly on 2 meters, to 20 probably as well, and that is with meteor scatter, tropospheric scatter, aurora, some limited ESCIP, especially at 2 meters, there is a significant number of amateurs who have worked the lower 48 states without using moon mounts.
Really?
From the Mississippi River Valley, plus or minus about 100 miles. I believe individuals like Joel Harrison, who, like I said, has worked all states number 11 now in 222. I believe Rick Roderick was another one of those. There is a significant number of central located amateurs who on 2 meters had worked the lower 48. Even when I was in Wisconsin originally, before I came to work for ARL, I accomplished 43 states from further north in Wisconsin and further east of the Mississippi. And my challenge was I was just getting a little bit too far from the West Coast to work those last few states that I needed on terrestrial methods. So it's very possible to do so. That is to come close to working the lower 48 without moon mounts. Alaska and Hawaii, of course, is requiring moon mounts. And this recent group is using moon mounts with the portable efforts of a number of terrific roving individuals, as we mentioned in the January ARL letter article, who have taken a couple of antennas, modest power, digital modes, and are providing those last few states needed for this new group to work all states on 222 megahertz.
Bart, if you were going to set up a what you might call competitive station for 222 megahertz, how would you equip it? In other words, what sort of hardware, antennas, and so on, generally speaking?
I guess to begin is you have to work within your means. So some people will scavenge to assemble the station that they intend to use. Others will break out their checkbook and or credit card and buy the components that will get them to the greatest performance. Essentially, antennas such as, I guess we can talk in either terms of length or in terms of wavelength, of two to three wavelengths or longer, power levels of, say, 500 watts up to 1500 watts, transverter from one of the manufacturers that provides transverters these days, you know, certainly domestically, Down East Microwave. There are some transverters on the secondhand market from Elcraft. There are some international suppliers of transverters for 220. There's the ACU-FT 736 with a 220 module, and ICOM at one point had an ICOM 375A, which was a dedicated 220 to 225 transceiver. So those would be examples of the how to get your frequency generated. Amplifiers are available from various manufacturers for the 220 band. Manufacturers, Steve, as you know, having done some of the reviews from Jim W6PQL, also the LunarLink amplifiers. There are some solid state amplifiers, TE systems, and of real interest to amateur radio operators, as we are those who will scavenge or try to do the most for the least cost, is TV drawers coming out of the analog to digital conversion, where manufacturers like Larkin, Harris, and others had these television drawers for channels 11, 12, and 13, or if you will, high VHF, that with little to no adjustment, and when I say adjustment, I'm talking about how you modify the connectors for the amplifiers for power to enable or if you will, interrupt bias, and also to establish input and output connectors that are more consistent with amateur radio use. These can generate anywhere from several hundred watts in the, 500 to 800 watt range, all the way up to some of these generating 1500 watts plus. So there's a great market for those, operating generally at 48 volts. And lastly, antennas. And this is, again, a fun part as well. Manufacturers like Directive Systems and Engineering I believe Terry is in Virginia these days, who have a 16-element Yagi for 220 megahertz or 222, I should say. And also, I believe they have a larger one that they will make available for special order. You have M Squared with their 10-element, as well as a 5-wave length and a 7-wave length. The 7-wave length is a special order or may have been discontinued, but has been available previously for some healthy long antennas. Scaling designs of antennas that you already have down to 222 also works, like taking the design of a 2-meter Yagi and making it into a 222 Yagi is not overly complicated. And in fact, even modification of existing 220 antennas to cover 222 is an option. For example, the 220 boomer of days of old, the Cushcraft antenna, with some minor adjustments would be still a decent performing antenna at 222 megahertz and could be used there directly, but its performance would go up with some smaller modifications. And don't forget antennas like N6NB, Wayne Overbeck's Quaggy antennas, which everybody finds as a fun and interesting project to build Quaggies, quad-driven element, quad reflector, and Yagi directors. And also WA5VJB has his portable antenna designs. I think he calls them the WA5VJB cheap Yagis, which are, again, a similar approach to simply building an antenna for yourself.
When it comes to antennas, Bart, what about the height factor? I mean, are we talking about having to install a tower on your property or moving to a home on top of a mountain?
And that's the sort of the funny part of it all, Steve, and people don't always fully embrace the principle. If for example, your location is an extreme East Coast or an extreme West Coast or Alaska or Hawaii location, more often than not, the bulk of your QSOs are going to be made by making your contacts through moon bounce. In the case of moon bounce, having your antenna 10, 15, 20, or 30 feet closer to a 250,000-mile path doesn't really accomplish a whole lot. So you can mount them as close to the ground as is practical for your circumstance, you know. Keep it above a height so that you can mow underneath or people don't hit their heads on it or things like that. The closer to the ground a moon mount's antenna is, the more, if you will, adjustments or maintenance can be done on it. And in some cases, physical pointing of the antenna can be done through a manual process. If you are located in a part of the country where you're looking to make, you know, meteor scatter, aurora, possible e-skip or terrestrial tropospheric contacts, you want to get above your nearby obstructions. So if you've got buildings nearby, you've got trees nearby, you want to be just above them, but not so high necessarily. It all depends on what your financial and your physical means are based on any restrictions you have on your property. But generally, you simply want to get above things that will absorb RF, like wet tree leaves and stuff like that. And remember, the higher you go, the further you are away from the shack, the more feed line loss you have.
Oh, absolutely. That's something that has to be remembered.
Exactly. And again, you consider things like, okay, I can generate more power, but am I going to be able to hear the stations who are responding to me at that higher power level? So you need to give some thought to having a very good low-loss feed line. They tend to be larger in diameter. They tend to be more costly. They tend to be more difficult or at least more challenging to route, you know, in and out of the house, across the yard, around the tower, things like that. And then secondarily, whether or not you believe it necessary based on the size of your feed line, to have a preamp and having said that, have the preamp at the tower, have separate bypass relays or a TR relay where you transmit through a low loss feed line and maybe bring back the receive through a smaller, lossier feed line where the gain of the preamp overcomes the losses. And it comes back to your transverter or transceiver as a split input and output, especially in the case of a transverter, many of them designed so that you can have a separate transmit out and a separate receive input.
Well, thank you very much, Bart. There's a lot of information here to absorb. Very helpful.
Well, you're very welcome, Steve. And again, congratulations to those who entered into the new quest for worked all states on 222. The list is growing. There's been people who have been working at this for a long time. They couldn't have done this without the efforts of not only their own dedication, but that of people who have offered to set up a station, either portable or as a, if you will, a rover of sorts. And these people, especially the portable and rover folks, are the difference for these stations seeking WAS, because they wouldn't have these states through routine contacts normally. And of course, as this activity grows and as we get more hype or talk about it, and of course, like I said, the Central States VHF conference will have an article in its proceedings on the quest for 222 megahertz WAS, getting that word out, getting people interested. 222 megahertz will come as a surprise to many when they listen to it as compared to, say, 2 meters or 432, as a band that is very quiet as compared to the noise you more typically might hear on 2 meters or 432. So that is one of the benefits as well, is that not only is a quiet band, but when you're listening to weak signals and you've got the audio turned up, you know how it can get uncomfortable listening for long periods of time.
Oh, yeah.
To what would be man-made or even some natural noise. And 220 is a quiet band in that regard.
Perfect. Thanks again, Bart.
You're very welcome, Steve.
Tune in again for the next episode of Eclectic Tech, produced by ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. Music is provided by Purple Planet at purpleplanet.com. If you have comments, email eclectic@arrl.org. This episode is copyright ARRL and all rights are reserved. I'm Sabrina Jackson, KC1JMW. See you next time.